All right, Dave, I can't tell you how excited I was for this episode.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Just more cue.
Ramped up, amped up. I okay. was so psyched.
Okay.
And it delivered.
Okay. Yeah. 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 You seemed like it was a hard time not talking about it before we got here.
It was so difficult.
Yeah. Because I came home and you were like midway through and you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah. No. Glued to the couch. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get into it.
Okay.
So hello and welcome to Star Trek, the Next Generation Rewatch podcast where one longtime fan, myself, and a newcomer, my wife, Amara.
Space Hamlet enthusiast.
Space Hamlet enthusiast, Amara. Watch old episodes of TNG, and then we compare notes. And today's episode is episode 10 from season 1, called Hide and Cue.
I actually have a different title for this, which is called Giving the Ladies What They Want.
Okay. It's just more Cue?
Let's just say fanfic of Cue and Riker.
Okay. Wow. All right. Okay. I like where this is going. So this episode aired November 23rd, 1987. It was written by Maury Hurley, and it was directed by Cliff Boyle, who also directed The Lonely Among Us, the episode with the Antikins and the Cele and the Green Noose.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That was a decent episode. Yeah.
All right. So we kick the episode off. We've got the usual Captain's Log entry, and the setup for this episode is that the Enterprise is heading to this mining disaster or mining accident, and they've got to rescue a bunch of miners who have, like, some methane explosion or something like that.
Yeah, okay. So, something okay. to say. Again, I always have so much stuff to say in the first 5 minutes.
Okay,
the
yeah.
The setup always gets me. So, accidental explosion at a mining operation? Mm-hmm. What have I been saying since episode one? Starfleet is a world of OSHA violations, and this is just proof. They don't have a methane monitor. They have a methane explosion. You know what they had in the 1900s, Dave? Canaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's a different gas, not methane.
No, they say methane explosion.
Oh, do they say methane?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Riker specifically says it's a methane explosion. And I'm like, okay, so we can do warp speed to be advanced, but you guys can't figure out a methane detector?
Yeah.
Okay, Starfleet. Like, what are they teaching these kids?
Apparently nothing about the dangers of methane.
I guess not. And we get to see, like, Picard's like, oh, Dr. Crusher is working with the medical staff to do all this stuff. And we finally get to see the unsung heroes of the Enterprise.
The blue shirts?
The residents who are working 80-hour weeks.
Yeah.
And probably, honestly, using some of Q's leftover space cocaine from that first episode.
So actually, we're just kind of, we got the episode playing in the background while we do these, just to remind us. And like in the very beginning, the walls are different.
They are different.
I didn't notice this. Yeah. Dang. They're like all flashy or something. It's like this other special corridor.
It is.
That's kind of crazy. And as Amara's saying, yeah, like Crusher is like getting ready and she's got her like resident minions kind of around her, capering around her.
Right.
To try to get everything ready to help the miners.
You say minions, I say support staff in both the figurative and literal sense.
Or like, real heroes. Yeah.
These the real heroes.
Yeah.
And also, I love how she's just like, we're ready to treat burns.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, God, Crusher. I was like, okay. She's probably thinking like, oh, what's the opposite of fire? Water. And just planning on drowning everyone. Yeah. Just flood in the mine.
Or just blankets for everyone.
Yeah. Just tossing blankets at people. And the residents are like, Jesus. Like, I need more cocaine.
Not to harp on this, but I'm really surprised by that wall thing. I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
So like fans of the show, you should check this out. And this first couple of minutes, there's the walls. It's very crazy. Because normally the walls are pretty stereotyped. Anyway, so as Amara says, yeah, they're warping to this disaster. Crusher's all gearing up. And as they're going in warp speed towards the mining disaster, suddenly we get the
Space
energy wall.
Hamlet!
Okay. We get the energy
Space
wall,
Hamlet,
like the chainmail and space thing that Q.
Wobbly wall, Space Hamlet.
AKA Space Hamlet, as Amara calls him.
It's Jimmy and like Space Hamlet.
It's his sign. So they're stopped by the space chainmail or the chainmail in space.
Yeah.
And right away, Q, as soon as they get stopped, Q appears on the bridge. But he doesn't appear in his usual form. He appears as a weird ball of light.
Rude. Okay, first off, don't be hating on someone who knows how to make an entrance. You're married to a theater major, okay? Rude.
Okay.
May have been the behind-the-scenes stuff in set construction, but still, rude.
He does know how to make an entrance. I gotta give him that. Yeah.
Yeah, and also we find out his preferred pronoun is not he, it's we.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
because it's We Are the Q. It's a collective, right? I didn't know that from the first one.
Yes. Yeah. So they do advance the Q narrative a little bit in this. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I was like, oh, great. All right. Because before, I remember the first episode, I was like, oh, I don't want to put him, like, generalize stuff.
So I don't know. I guess maybe this isn't spoilers at this point. But like, as you mentioned, the Q, or I think it comes up in here, the Q is like a continuum of beings. Mm-hmm. The Q we meet here is just one example of those beings.
Yeah, yeah, but he's like probably the most fabulous because he takes the shape of the shimmery ball. And at first I thought it was three like boas. And
yeah.
I was like, is he going to Elton John up the place? And then they stopped forming. So they're like partially see-through, right?
Yeah.
And it turns out they're three cobras.
Yeah.
So I thought like feathery boa, and then it turned out to be a cobra. So actually not that big of a jump in logic. Yeah.
Yeah. So I completely forgot about this appearance, this part, right? Like
the cobras?
No, just that he appeared as something not humanoid.
Oh.
And like, yeah, if you want to check this out, it's at minute 130. It's like this ball of light with three cobras sitting on top of it. And it's like surrounded by like a haze of little stars swimming around it. And it kind of looked, when I first saw it, I thought it was like two or three rabbit ears. It was really weird. But yeah, they're...
No, it looks like a disco ball with three cobras just chilling on the top.
Yeah, I think he calls them later Aldarin cobras or something like that.
Apparently, it's not his true form, which I was like, oh, that's too bad. Because like three red cobras, pretty badass. And I was like, the red to match his Prada gloves from the first episode.
Yeah.
He has a favorite color. Sorry, we have a, it'd be they great have if a it was favorite color.
Three Prada gloves on top of a ball.
Yeah, I would also be psyched for that. And he also says something amazing, which is, if my magnificence blinds you. And I'm like, oh, he knows how to read a room. It does.
So before he gets to that, though, he says something in the crew of the Enterprise along the lines of, I would have thought you had scampered back to your own star system by now, right? That's his like entrance remark. But as soon as this happens and he appears, the bridge crew reacts. And I think my favorite reaction is Worf.
Yeah.
Who, as soon as he like sees it's Q and hears the voice, he's like so triggered by Q's voice. Mm-hmm. He leaps over like the kind of banner that separates the weapon station where Yar stands from the rest of the bridge. He leaps over it and like gets his phaser out and gets ready to shoot Q. And if you want to check this out, it's like minute 135.
Right.
It's a really impressive display of athleticism by actor Michael Dorn.
For those of you unfamiliar with Star Trek, like me, I would describe it as like a Karen running to complain to a manager, like that kind of urgency.
He's very eager to get in there.
He's so eager to get there and reprimand that minimum wage worker. Watch out, shoving people aside.
And Picard tells Q that they're on this urgent rescue mission to like save these miners. And Q is like, he's not having any of this, right? He says like the Q, speaking like the race, the Q, we've studied you and we're impressed by you and we've got this business to discuss with you that's more pressing than this salvation mission. We're here to kind of answer your wildest dreams, right?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's another Taylor Swift song.
Okay. Oh, is it?
Yeah, wildest dreams.
And then as Amara said, yeah, like Q says, well, I'm sorry if my magnificence blinds you.
Blinds you.
And then he converts back to the usual form we recognize of Q in the guise.
Dave, he's bedazzled the hell out of that uniform.
So it is the actor, you know, John DeLance.
Yes.
But now he's wearing a Starfleet outfit. And I completely forgotten about this. He's got this like thick gold sash that runs like along one side and down. It's, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, I was like, oh, wait a second. So I wasn't too off base, because if Elton John had made a Starfleet uniform, this is what it would look like.
This is definitely what Elton John's Starfleet uniform.
And I was like, I love it. Like, finally, someone besides the freaking Ferengi know how to use sequins.
Yeah.
It's about damn time.
Oh, my God. You really love...
I am bedazzled.
You love Q so much.
See how instead of dazzled, I said bedazzled? Nice. Hey.
So if you're interested, check it out. It's minute 213, where you can see this Admiral uniform, and he refers to himself as Starfleet Admiral Q.
Yeah. And at this point, I'm bummed out for Dr. Crusher's space residents, because they just probably took a lot of cocaine to deal with a lot of burn victims for no reason.
Oh, you think Q's going to like...
No, he's just like wasting their time right now, right? Oh. So they were like, all right, we're amped up right on this planet and prevent Dr. Crusher from drowning everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Treating burns. Yeah, let's go. Hour 80 for work week. And now Q's just like, hold up.
Yeah.
Fancy,
Q's got a Q.
And we got to do some games or something. And they're like, damn it, I wasted my space cocaine.
And so after Q arrives, we have the usual credits scene. So when we return from the credits, Q starts talking with the rest of the crew, and it kind of becomes apparent that this time around, he's very intrigued by Riker.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the start of a very uncomfortable conversation. Actually, it's not uncomfortable for me at all. Love this conversation. Riker is leering at Q.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm like, hey now.
He does seem to be enjoying this mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah.
And like Picard is not having it. He's like, we want to save these miners and like, what the hell? But Riker is like, hey, Q.
I would argue that it's akin to flirting, Dave.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa.
Okay.
And then I remembered it was the late 80s and homophobia was rampant. So I love to think of this as just like a low key, like love note for folks out there.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like there's definitely some energy between Q and Riker that I was like, oh.
So Riker, always thirsty.
I mean, I think they're thirsty for each other. This entire episode's just like a ruse for Q to set up a date with Riker. Spoiler alert. All right. This is like the time you try
That's
to talk
true
to me.
It is. Right. It's all just a kind of pretext to get him in the command tent.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, yeah.
Oh my God,
I'm sorry
like
for ruining your childhood, but like I did Google Riker Q fanfic and there were a lot of results, Dave. So I am not the only one thinking about this.
I have no response to that.
Yeah, it's just like that time that I watched Too Fast, Too Furious and I was like wrestling in the dirt for like 10 minutes. Now, how is this not a ladies film?
Yeah,
like
so...
this is. I mean, they broke up at some point, right? Like,
this is one of
lovers
our longstanding inside jokes, I guess. One time Amara was watching...
time I've watched it.
Too Fast, Too Furious. And there's that scene where Paul Walker finally...
Yeah, now like I call it said, Too Fast, Too Curious.
Now she calls it Too Fast, Too Curious.
Because they just don't see... They just keep yelling at each other and they're like standing so close to each other. And I'm like, the sexual tension is palpable.
So you think this is another Too Fast, Too Curious situation?
Oh, hell yeah. You can't convince me otherwise, Dave. This is like a love episode.
No, I do not want to convince you. I want to see where this goes.
Okay. You're only going to see more confirmation.
So, as I mentioned, Q is intrigued by the presence of Riker. Riker says, like, you know, he's really worried about these suffering people. Mm-hmm. And Q says something along the lines of, like, oh, you humans are always suffering and dying, right?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, so Q's been hanging out with the American healthcare system because he's showing the same level of concern as the billing department generally shows us. Yeah.
This does not, this actually provokes Worf, who growls at Q, and then Q calls him a macro head with a micro brain, which I thought was not a very well crafted insult.
Yeah, I thought that was a stupid insult. And also, I just really wanted to take a moment to appreciate, because I feel like I've been hard on Riker. You know, like, I was like, is he being like, pervy on the women.
Yeah.
And since he leered at Q, I was like, oh, he's an equal opportunity leerer. And I mean, it's still not great to leer at people in the workplace, but I do appreciate that it's like anyone can be leered at, you know?
Well, again,
he's a sailor. It just doesn't feel like sexist anymore. Yeah. It's like, all right.
Okay, then it's.
and then the whole like comment about like, all right. Your species is always suffering and dying. Yeah. That also sounds like something Jeff Bezos would say. So I'm like, is Q part of the billionaire class? And that's how he can do all this travel and stuff.
He kind of is like in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I have another theory on that later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait. Yeah. So Picard says he'd be happy to listen to Q's proposal about fulfilling their impossible dreams, but we have to do it after this mission. And Q says to Picard, like, why do you distrust me so much? And then Picard lays into him, you know, and he recounts all these things. Like, at our first encounter, you seized my vessel. You threatened our people with judgment in Court of Horrors. You attacked my people during this court. And again, you seized my vessel. You're generally not a trustworthy thing. And Q responds that essentially, yeah, but you guys handled that so well that the Q continuum is now interested in you. So congratulations, you're super lucky, right? We find you interesting.
Yeah, and Picard's got a lot of gal on like getting up on his soapbox and being like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I'm sorry, Picard, bitch. Didn't you just forget that you shot down like a freaking Starfleet vessel or a Ferengi vessel in the last episode and you just have a complete memory block on like a month of your life where you're on like space shuttles and you're like, hey, I don't remember this at all. I murdered a bunch of people. Hey, that's possible war crime.
Just as a reminder, we are coming hot off the episode where Amara thought Picard may be a war criminal.
Yeah. So I'm like, why is your soapbox there and why is it so damn tall, Picard?
But he does the soapbox so well.
He does.
He's so good at his like impassioned, justified rage or whatever, how you want to call it. Like, he's very good at that.
Well, I don't have the short-term memory problems that he seems to have. So I'm still kind of like, okay. I mean,
So after this exchange, after Q says to basically yells out to the bridge, and we get this nice wide shot of Q like, how lucky you are, how fortunate you are.
He's not wrong.
The Q is interested in them. He turns to Riker, or Riker says to him, excuse me, we don't have time for these games. And games, apparently, you don't want to say that to Q, because Q is like, did someone say games? Like, perhaps
they
a deadly
it.
Game? Oh, my God.
They love it.
This was, like, custom written for you.
And, like, I'm here for it. I'll be honest, Dave, it was at this moment in this episode that I had a moment of, like, existential dread.
Okay.
Because Q is so fabulous, and I'm happy to see it.
Yeah.
But it just like Elton John, who's like the only person I've ever seen in concert. Say, hey, crowds.
Yeah.
It brings up this like dread in my life. Like, I know I will never be that cool or that fabulous. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, God damn it.
Yeah. So Q, as I mentioned, he's like amped up by the phrase games. And he says then perchance a deadly game. And then he disappears in like the traditional Q flash.
Right. But before this, when they're all on the bridge, I'm not sure if you noticed this, but like, so all the guys are like, yeah, excellent posture. And Tasha's kind of hunched over a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, she was the only one who was frozen in the last time. So she's probably like, oh, here it comes. Yeah. Here it comes.
She's hunkering down.
Yeah. And I was like, Q does not seem to like the ladies so far and what we've seen. Mm,
I see.
And then this like opinion. Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see what happens.
So another comment, actually, while we're on the bridge, did you notice anyone being absent?
Yeah, I was really happy there was no Wesley, and I was like, hell yeah.
Anyone else?
No.
So actually, Counselor Troi is not in this episode.
Yeah, they mentioned that in the opening sequence.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah. Picard says in his space diary that like she's away at her home planet on like something 3.
I missed that.
Three. Yeah. So I was like, ah, cool. Like, I honestly thought this was a bit of a package episode because like Patrick Stewart and the gal who plays Troi were like, hey, we need time off. Like, we need time off. She's like, this bodysuit's getting lower and lower on my chest. And I'm like, Patrick Stewart's like, I didn't think this would last so long. I have to go back to England and feed my fish or whatever. Because like, he's pretty...
He's front and center.
He's
in
only in it for like 10 minutes.
In this one?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that's true. That it is more Riker heavy.
It's very Riker heavy. And yeah, and it's very West Low, which I appreciated. But I did miss Troi.
But actually, so I think this one and another couple of them, Troi is almost completely absent. And this led to speculation. The actress was removed from the show where she thought she was going to get fired.
Oh, no.
But it turned out not to be the case. But,
okay. Yeah,
just an interesting side note I came across.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So Q disappears in a flash and also transports the rest of the Q in the same Q flash to like this barren, rocky... Well, it's a soundstage. It's a very thinly disguised soundstage with a green kind of starless sky.
And it's a green screen, y'all. They didn't even bother to like put in something. They're just like, we'll just keep it green. Looks alien. We're good.
But he leaves Picard still on the bridge.
Yeah.
So, but everyone else gets transported to this queue. So at this point, I had in mind to ask you, Amara, did you have any thoughts on this point about what's going on here?
Yeah, they straight up stole the set from the Twilight Zone, where the astronauts get like stranded on a foreign planet. And they're like, we're not going to update this. It's good in the 70s. It's good now. 60s?
It also looks very similar to the set of the, you know, where they're on the planet with the Ferengi and the first Ferengi encounter. Yeah. It's like the same soundstage. Like they've got the rocks, no dry ice this time, different color sky.
No crystals.
No Zordon. Oh. They just wheeled the crystals out with some dollies.
Yeah.
Now they're here.
Yep.
So Q relocates Riker, Worf, Yar, Data, and Geordi to this nebulous planet thing. No Picard. And Data immediately notes like we're on an M-class planet, where we've got some appropriate oxygen and appropriate level of gravity. Geordi notes that there's 2 moons. Mm-hmm. And Data also points out that like they really could be anywhere. Like they may not even be on a place that exists in the universe. Like Q could have just made this whole thing up.
No one's talking about the silent killer, Dave. What's the methane levels on that planet? You know?
Yeah, they didn't mention anything about methane. Again, Starfleet has a blind spot for methane, apparently. So then we flash back to the bridge, and it's just poor Picard by himself.
And I didn't think about this, but Dave,
yeah.
Picard's probably gone his entire life without having to like physically open a door. So he's like super like yeah. confused.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh. He's like a little hamster.
Yeah.
Like just going up to each like wall, like, ah.
He's walking around. Trapped. You know, he's calling for security, for engineering. He's pressing consoles. Nothing's happening. And then he goes up to the doors yeah. and just holds his hand in front of them.
And they don't open.
And they don't like, open.
Ah.
Yeah. So he's kind of trapped.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Yeah, and it's not like they seem to have like Snake or anything fun on the consoles, so I don't know. I guess yeah. he's just sitting there.
Yeah, there's no games.
That's why you shouldn't go with minimalism, Dave. You get trapped in a room during an earthquake or a Q invasion.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going
to
look at?
Yeah, you want to have distractions on the bridge of the Galaxy-class starship.
I'm just saying like a space encyclopedia might be cool, or maybe a list of different gases that can be fatal to man. Something.
You do love your safety-based decorations.
I just think that there's a place for all of them, and I, yes.
Okay. So back on the planet or wherever it is, Yar is actually, she's got her phaser out, and she's like, oh, sir, over there. And she spots Q, who is dressed up.
10 out of 10 on this ensemble. Dave, can we get into it?
Oh, yes. I don't think we have a choice. So Q is dressed as a Napoleonic general.
Love it!
Oh my god!
Love it!
He's got like the hat, you mm-hmm. know, the hat that's kind of parallel to his shoulders. There's a cannon, right? He's got the coat, or a golden sash, or a belt. That's the whole nut. He's got a riding crop as mm-hmm. well. A lot of
that's
things.
What that was.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this like small pointless stick? I'm like, it's not a walking stick. And he keeps stroking it in a weird way, and I was like, is that like a preserved snake or something? Like,
oh my god.
It's a riding crop. That makes so much more sense now. Yes. Wow.
Well, does it? Because there's no horses.
Oh.
But
oh,
I guess...
no! Dave, don't give the fanfic people more ammunition!
So Q basically invites Riker to come over and sit down in this little general's command tent that
he's set
up.
And it's like the most French tent ever. It's like got fleur-de-lis on it and
yeah.
stuff. It's very French.
It's very French. Yeah, very French. A lot of, yeah, like you said, blue and that sort of thing. And Riker sits down. Then Riker kind of immediately gets served an old-fashioned lemonade.
I'm sorry, Dave's simplifying this too much. Y'all,
okay.
It's a fancy table. There's like beautiful glassware and china, and like yeah. there's like nice gold rim along the top of the glasses. And it's a table set for two.
It, yeah.
And like Q's there in their best attire, like
yeah.
dressed to the nines. And he's like, Riker, join me. And it's like, oh.
You know, now that we're watching it together, it is a couple steps away from candles, like a candlelit moonlight dinner. Just a little bit, you know, if they had better lighting,
yeah.
they could have done moonlit dinner.
So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just, there was a lot of giggling for me through this episode, because I was like, they would be such a cute couple.
And Q serves Riker a like an old-fashioned lemonade, which Riker says he was just thinking about this, like having yeah. a nice lemonade, and suddenly it materializes. And then Q materializes nice drinks for everyone, right? Everyone that's not sitting down at the table for two suddenly gets a nice beverage.
Yeah, and then also I was like, okay, did he just manufacture this whole game thing so he could get some one-on-one time with Riker? And guess who's wearing the sexy boots now?
Yeah.
Space Hamlet.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's funny that Riker does seem to be, like, if this was Picard would be like, what the hell? Like, stop fooling around. Like, let's, you know, we got to deal with these miners or whatever. Let's get back on track. Riker's kind of into it.
Dave, objective, looking at this, it looks like two guys on a date. Like, there's nothing not to say that. Like, they seem to be enjoying each other's company.
Mm-hmm.
Riker's smiling, leering a bit, and like...
Yeah.
You know, Space Hamlet's like, whoa, ho, ho, and they're joking and stuff. And I'm like, this is a successful first date, except for the rest of the crew standing around watching them.
Yeah, that's a little awkward. Also, the cannons. And so, as I mentioned, Q gives drinks to everyone else. And there's this great shot of Worf at 9:30, who like Worf gets this blood wine, presumably, which is a Klingon drink.
Oh, that's what that was.
That's what I'm guessing.
Okay.
It doesn't actually come up, but like blood wine is a thing Klingons like to drink. And mm-hmm. this, if I'd had to guess, it would be that. And so Worf stares at Q as he pours out the drink, like, into the ground in this very dramatic fashion. I quite enjoyed that.
I liked that LeVar threw it back.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He was just like, all right, can't beat him, join him. And I was like, you know what? LeVar is my spirit animal.
Yeah.
Because I think if I were in that situation, I was like, well, I got to watch my boss go on a date. Cool.
Yeah.
I'd just be like, all right. Well, give me the beverage.
Q does mention this planet is quite warm. It's quite hot.
Yeah.
So.
Might be time to take off some of those layers. That unitard. I'm sorry. There is extensive fanfic, though, guys. Like 10 minutes in, I Googled it.
So Riker and Q are talking, and as I noted down in my notes watching this episode, and as Amara obviously has noted, Riker seems to be enjoying himself, right? He seems to be taking this in really good humor and having a good time with this.
Yeah, my note literally was, damn, Space Hamlet is flirting hard. Okay.
So my note is, Riker seems to be enjoying himself. And your note is, Space Hamlet is flirting hard.
Okay.
It's a little illustration of our difference.
Like, I literally wrote, I'm into it.
You're here for it? So Q talks to Riker and he says, like, of all the species, like humans, yours cannot abide stagnation. Change is at the heart of what you are, but change into what? Ooh.
I actually have a lot more
oh boy.
To say yeah. prior to that.
Okay.
Okay. So Space Hamlet says that he set up this whole, like, business because he read Picard's brain. Mm-hmm. And Picard loves French crap.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I'm sorry, but if you're taking Riker on a date, shouldn't you have read his mind and found out what Riker likes, which is apparently Yankee traders?
That's true.
And then he would have had more luck on this date because Q could have used that knowledge to dress up like George Washington.
Yeah.
And Riker would have been like, hey, you know, instead of this Napoleon-esque
yeah.
character.
It's kind of like taking someone on a date to, like, a spot intended for your ex-girlfriend or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's a little embarrassing, Q. Bad planning on your part.
But, I mean, maybe it's just a form of, like, negging Riker. It was like...
Maybe it is. Oh, I didn't think about that. Woo!
Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm buying into this.
I mean, again, if this is what you're presented with, just, like, too fast, too curious, like... If that's what you're presented with, mm-hmm. you know, like, hey.
So
I think it's awesome.
Just rethinking all sorts of childhood television shows now.
As you should. I had a question for you about the Star Trek universe, actually.
Yeah.
So, Space Napoleon now, I guess.
Yes.
Or Q. I'll just call him Q. Ugh, I hate to give up, but okay.
Yeah.
He just changes too much. Q says, like, oh, the Klingons were, like, he says something jabby towards Worf about how the Klingons were, like, destroyed or defeated.
Oh, yeah.
So I wanted more info on that because I thought they had, like, a peace treaty or something. But the way he's describing it, he's, like, clearly trying to get Worf's goat by saying, like, you guys lost, you losers.
Yeah. So they do have a peace treaty. Like, there's a complicated history. So back in the original Kirk Spock era, they were at war.
Right.
But then through the course of the Star Trek movies, I forget which one it was, like the third or fourth, they do come to some, like, peace accords, and there's, like, a peace agreement between Starfleet and the Klingons, right? So in this era, they're not allies, but there's a peace treaty. But it's not the strongest treaty, right? So, like, sometimes there'll be friction and tension, and, like, and later TV show, there's outright war between Starfleet and the Klingon Empire.
Oh, no.
So at this point, though, they're not allies, but, like... not enemies. Yeah, just a treaty.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that doesn't sound like there was, like, a major loss.
But you could argue that from the Klingon point of view, a failure to have complete victory is a kind of a loss.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It could be something like that. Like, you guys settled for peace. You're, like, wusses, right? Something like that. That could be what he's driving at.
Mm.
So something that made me, I was thinking about this when I was watching it, is that I don't imagine, obviously we have no other life forms that we can, like, outside of this planet that we can look at. But I would imagine any life form that's going to evolve to dominate a planet will also have that desire to keep advancing. Like, it's weird that it's a unique human thing in the Star Trek universe. I would think it would apply to all species.
Well, it didn't apply to the Ego or the Eden people, right?
No. They were, like, this is a theme in TNG, is that humans are privileged in some sense.
Right. And that feels like it's just... You know what? There's other things than humans on that
absolutely.
Ship. So rude.
Yeah. anyways, we're getting way off topic. So Q discusses the game that they're going to have to play on this little planet that he's set up. And he asks, it's this kind of annoying thing where he knows what the game is, but he's pretending to come up with it while he's talking to them, kind of like toying with them. He's like, oh, should the game be based on strength? Like, no, you guys aren't very strong. What about intelligence? Well, not that intelligent.
He's snagging Riker so hard.
Yeah. And he also says that the prize will be something completely wonderful. But then, of course, the cost, if you lose, will have to be equally kind of traumatic or problematic. And he ultimately decides that the game will essentially be, can you stay alive?
Love it. Yeah. Simple, to the point.
It's very, yeah, very simple. And Worf says, like, if your game is fair, we will. And I really like Q's reply here is that he says, fairness is such a human concept that lacks imagination. So this game will be completely unfair. Right?
I had 2 points of observation here. One, at this point in the show, I noticed that both Q and Riker have feathery, poofed out hair compared to the first scene. And I was like, Well, this climate on this new planet is doing wonders for their hair. Because Space Hamlet had some unfortunate tiny bangs at the beginning.
He did. You're right.
Yeah. And Riker's hair was uncharacteristically flat. Now it's like feathery soft. And I'm like, all right, they got their Aquanet on. Cool.
Yeah, he has quite a collection of things, a kind of collection of ornaments there on his vest. Always coming fully ornamented.
Yeah, and I, again, love it. If you're going to, like, pretend to be someone else, go full tilt. Be the maximum version of that.
Yeah, Q does not go half measures.
Nope, he does not.
So, as Q says, you know, this game will be completely unfair. Again, flair for the dramatic. Yar protests and says, like, you've gone too far. And then Q replies, game penalty. And I think he points his like riding crop at her and she vanishes.
Yeah, she literally says, you've gone too far. To be clear, at this point, Worf has done way more threatening things.
Yeah.
Like he tried to sneak up and attack Q at one point. He like poured out his blood wine all haughtily and he's just like, rawr, rawr, rawr. And then Tasha says, you've gone too far and the only person with a vagina on this planet is banished. Dave, how do I not read into that?
So Q has transported her into a penalty box and informs them that there's only one spot in the penalty box and you can only have one person there at a time. So if anybody else gets a penalty, Tasha will be pushed out into nothingness.
To which I had a note, does Q have an issue with humanity or just womankind? Like, is he okay with 50% of the population, basically?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So I guess this is a little bit of a spoiler, but in one of the other series, Star Trek Voyager. So the captain there, as you know, I'm sure, is a woman, right? Uh-huh. Kate Mulgrew plays...
I did not know that.
Oh, you didn't? I thought I told you this.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
you
may
have. Sorry.
Yeah. Kate Mulgrew plays Captain Janeway, who's the captain of the Voyager, right? Mm-hmm. And it turns out, I just found this out today, in real life, the actor that plays Q and the actress that played...
They're married?
They're good friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's also good.
Yeah, but Q does appear in Voyager as well.
Yes! Yes! Oh, thank God. All right. I was so worried that we weren't going to see Q again. And he's like, why keep going on the show, on the episodes with the Ferengis, to be honest? Oh, thank God. All right. That makes me really happy.
So it's really funny, though, as Q is telling the people on the planet, like, if somebody else goes in the penalty box, Tasha's going to be disappeared into nothingness. I think it's minute 12:20. Data has apparently a very emotional reaction to the possibility of Tasha dying.
I missed that.
Yeah.
Aww.
I mean, it's Data emotion, so it's not like huge, robust. It's not Q emotion, right? But
right.
You can see like an exaggerated eye expansion.
Well, I feel like in many ways, like if we were to pick our characters... I would be Q and you would be Data.
I could totally see that. I could totally see that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it my bedazzled phone case that gave it away?
So now we have a commercial break. And as we return, we go back to the bridge where we see Picard being stuck. And he's just kind of sauntering around the bridge looking for something to do, essentially. But as he's there, Yar suddenly appears on the bridge, right? So I guess the bridge is the penalty box.
Yeah, right. Which like sick burn, Q.
And when Yara appears, she relays to Picard, like, you know, I'm in this penalty box and I don't know exactly what the deal is, but if anyone else comes here, I'm going to die, basically. Mm-hmm. And then she like has this really, I wouldn't say it's a strong reaction because you're about to die, but she says like she hates having this feeling of not being in control, not being able to control her own fate because like it's completely out of her hands.
Yeah.
And she starts breaking down and Picard comforts her, right? Mm-hmm. But also in this moment, I'm not a makeup person, but her makeup looks really weird.
It's so bad, Dave. I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, no, they overdid it. They used the wrong color foundation and someone went crazy matting her face. So to prevent her face from being shiny, you know, you like use a soft powder.
Yeah.
And someone went like crazy and just smacked her nose with it. So the residual powder is like all over her cheeks and stuff. Yeah. So she only has like partial blush on her cheeks. Her makeup's real bad.
It looks really, because
she looks like completely like blanched out.
Yeah, like it's 1405 is when I took the note for like it looks like the rest of her head is like red,
yeah,
except right around her nose bridge and her eyes and mouth, that's like white.
It's very clear that the makeup budget mostly went to Q and they're like, Tasha, just put on some chapstick, we're gonna blush you a little bit, poof your face for the shininess, call it a day.
I wonder if he just like literally used up all the makeups and then there was only a little bit left for Yar.
I have like a note that like there's $10,000 allocated for the costume budget for this episode, and they're like, $9,800 goes to just Q's character. Yeah. And then the other $200 we'll figure out the other people.
Well, money well spent, because I got to say, you know, Q, not unlike the Ferengi, he really holds the attention, right? He's a great character.
The camera loves him.
And so Picard goes to comfort Yar and succeeds in doing so and calms her down. And then she says a line of something like, oh, if you weren't the captain.
And I was like, whoa, Tasha, keep it in your pants. Yeah. And also, keep your hats on.
Yes,
don't
I
be
have
dropping
the same
your
note.
Hats.
Tasha's just dropping hats everywhere.
She's dropping hats everywhere. That's amazing. I literally put that too.
So while they're having this moment, you know, keeping their hats on, Q suddenly appears in his French Marshal outfit.
Holding the riding crop, which again, I was like, is that a skin steak? Someone didn't do equestrian sports.
So he chastises Picard, and Picard notices Q in his attire as a French marshal, and is like, French marshal, ha, indeed. And Q, which I love this line, says, you take the jobs you can get. So Q does this log entry full of exposition, where he tells Picard, you know, I've set up this game with your bridge crew. I didn't want to do it with you because you're basically too stodgy and uninteresting, right? So instead, I'm going to do it predominantly with Riker. If he wins, he'll get this great prize. And if he loses, there'll be consequences. And
the literal sentence is, Riker will be offered something impossible to refuse. And I was like, we got it, Q, a threesome.
Like, who would be the...
Tasha.
Oh, okay.
Riker would be like, all right, I agree to this.
Yeah, well...
And Q would be like, oh, fine. Not the threesome I had in mind, but okay.
So they agree to a wager, right? And essentially, like, if Riker wins, Q is promised to leave humanity alone. But if Riker loses, if Q wins, then Picard will give up his command, essentially. And so now we flash back to the planet where Worf has gone on to the scouting mission. And he's running around and he encounters a group of what he calls vicious alien things, which are basically like these green-faced aliens with makeup on, dressed in Napoleonic soldier attire. And so things are really heating up on the planet, right? They've discovered their antagonist, their principal source for danger in the game.
Mm-hmm. And you guys, they got their wigs and masks at Party City. Like, yeah, this is where the other $200 went for the costuming. They're just like, go to Party City, get yourself a Napoleon outfit.
Yeah.
You know, it's so bad that from a distance, I was like, that is a shitty wig from like...
But I mean,
40 feet away.
To be fair, or whatever. To be fair, Worf's makeup looks pretty good, or Michael Dorn's. Like, that looks really realistic, or you know, reasonably. The aliens will look terrible.
Oh, like no, they all look terrible. Like, I think it was like, sorry, I should say $10,000 allocation for like our primary antagonist of this episode.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, $9,800 to Q, $200 to these like space pink human people in Napoleon outfits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they probably bought like three of them and they had to share them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really gross, really sweaty, probably smelled bad.
So we go back aboard the Enterprise where Picard is walks into his ready room and there's Q dressed as the marshal with his feet up on Picard's desk, just doing anything he can to needle Picard.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. I thought he was showing off his sexy boots. Okay.
And so Q's got like the complete works of Shakespeare in his lap and they have a little Shakespeare duel, essentially, right? Well, you're rolling your eyes pretty hard there.
Well, you guys, just for the record, in a Shakespeare duel, or if you're trying to like outwit someone.
Wait, sorry, did you just say in a Shakespeare duel? Like there are rules? You've experienced Shakespeare duels before? I guess theater
to
major.
Plead for love deserves more fee than hate.
Are we about to have a Shakespeare duel?
No, because okay. I would destroy you.
Oh, strong
I'm just
words.
Kidding. I wouldn't. Okay. I'm more of a Marlowe person.
I don't know who that is.
No, I'm just saying, like, we all are familiar with, like, I'd say a couple works of Shakespeare, right? Like, I think everyone's read Hamlet and Romeo and Juliet at some point during their, like, public school education.
Certainly been asked to read them, yes.
And then seen, like, movie versions. Like, for Hamlet, there's the Mel Gibson version. Yeah. And there's, like, a newer version now with, like, Daisy Ridley, which is really good.
Really?
It's about Ophelia. Yeah, it's from, like, Ophelia's perspective.
Oh, interesting.
And then we've all seen, like, the Romeo and Juliet, like, either the 90s version with young
Leonardo
Leo
DiCaprio.
And Claire Danes.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool. I got to say, I liked it. I remember it was like, or the old timey one from like, I think it was like late 60s, early 70s. I don't know. The point is, we all are familiar with those, I would say, like collectively.
Okay.
Hamlet is not really a stable character that you want to be flaunting quotes from. Like, he straight up murders Ophelia's dad, if anyone remembers. And it's like, what was your takeaway from this play, Picard? Like, Hamlet's someone to emulate. No.
But I think the specific lines he uses to good effect in here, right? So Q starts out with saying some quotes, I think, from Macbeth, like, all the world's a stage and, you know, we are poorly players who strut and fret our hour upon the stage and then are heard no more. Something along those lines.
He does a variation with Galaxy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Picard responds with, I think this was from Hamlet, about, and I love this line where he says, like, you know, what Hamlet says with irony, I say with conviction, oh, what a piece of work is man, how noble in reason, how infinite in faculties. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great line. Just because Hamlet said it doesn't mean that the sentiment is any less correct, right?
I just think, like, we're talking about what, this is bad because I should know off the top of my head, but over 40 works of Shakespeare, Merchant of Venice, way better lines. Two Gentlemen from Verona, way better and more applicable lines. Like, there's so many other plays that Shakespeare did that are, like, way more applicable. You don't have to always do something from Romeo and Juliet or Hamlet because all those characters have problems. And I feel like a modern psychologist would be like, no.
But again, just because the character has a problem doesn't mean that the lines themselves don't contain some usefulness to them or some truth in them.
That's a fair point, I guess. And I mean, Picard does specify that without irony.
Yeah.
So he is taking it in a different direction than what Hamlet was. So that kind of removes the insanity aspect.
And also, like, with conviction that, like, you know, I think, what a piece of work is man, how noble in reason, how infinite in faculties.
Yeah, no, it's you're right. I will concede. That's a good point.
He finishes by saying, I think in an apparition, how like a god, right? And then Q responds is like, this is how you see yourself as a god? And Picard says, like, I see us one day becoming that. And says to Q, like, that's really what frightens you, isn't it? Is that humanity has this potential to become like much greater than it is. And Q is like, roar, and just disappears in a flash. He's been foiled again.
Yeah. And then I was like, well, crap, I can't call him Space Hamlet anymore because like Picard is Space Hamlet? No. So yeah, he was just Q.
Yeah. Well,
but no, it was good. You're right. And I agree. Since he did say the right context for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like barking at a tree for no reason. Does that make sense? No. Barking at a car. There we go.
Barking at a Picard.
Barking at Picard. Okay, so I had a theory at this point in the episode.
Yeah.
So I thought that the test was actually that it was going to end up being something like Twilight Zone-y, where it's like, we assume that the race that's different from us, these other people are the ones that are primitive, but in actuality, it's us who are primitive. So it was going to end with Riker and the other members of the Way group making a peace treaty with the manufactured pig people that Q has.
Oh, interesting.
Hunting them or whatever that they have to stay alive against.
That's really
interesting.
And I was
like, that would be the twist then, because it's like, oh, see, it wasn't conflict that resolved it. It was
diplomacy. Yeah, I guess that would fall in line kind of a little bit from the encounter at Farpoint,
exactly.
Too.
Yeah. That's where I thought it was going.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it didn't.
No, instead they're just...
Hard right turn.
Yeah. they're just cannon fodder, much like the Napoleonic counterparts.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, it was interesting that we watched this like a couple weeks after our Leningrad episode on our other podcast, because it's like, once again, people underestimating Russians.
Oh, yeah.
Just thinking about like Napoleon's invasion of Russia and then like Germany's invasion.
Did that go poorly?
Yeah. Oh my God. Seriously? Yeah. Napoleon lost his crown after that.
I've only heard good things about land wars in Russia during the winter. Seems to go, I mean, just go right over the ice, right?
it's fine unless you're in Finland, and then those Finlands will just like mess you up. Like, get the hell out of Finland.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think Finland's so cool. Okay.
So in our next scene, we return back to the planet where Geordi is using a visor to note that the army of Ezemar called them pig people.
I don't know.
Or the vicious animal things are advancing towards them in a skirmish line. And Riker, Data, Geordi are discussing this, and they're kind of not too worried because they say, like, well, they've got muskets. We've got phasers. Mm-hmm. So it's probably going to be fine, assuming our phasers work. So Riker takes out his phaser just to check it and like blasts a piece of rock nearby.
Yeah.
The rock explodes. And then out of nowhere, Worf jumps out from behind a rock and yells like, drop your weapons. And he just goes into full battle mode.
And I was like, what's the problem with this? It seems better than a phaser.
Which I loved because Worf has obviously no idea where they are.
Yeah.
And he just comes out fully just bluffing. Like, yes, I have you now.
I would be bluffed. I'd be like, whoa.
Yeah. Be intimidated by Worf.
Yeah, literally anyone who yells at me, I'm intimidated by Dave. This should not be a surprise.
And then Geordi says like, wow, incredible Worf. You came out of nowhere. And Worf just says, a warrior's response or something like that.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
I'm like, good for you, Worf. Because Q was trying to tear him down before. And I was like, no, Worf, you're wonderful. It's not cool of Q to do that.
So now the vicious animal things appear on screen. And they're kind of really coming close to them, and they're going to start firing soon, or going to start attacking. And Riker turns to Data and says, like, Data, if you have a theory, like, kind of, I want to hear it now. And as he turns to Data, Data has suddenly become Q-ified.
Yeah, which I could tell immediately from the back of the head. It's like, they like, have Data turn around.
Yeah.
And, like, and then it switches to Riker's face.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I have a theory, Data. And then, like, it goes back, and it's like, well, that's obviously Q in a Data outfit. Because, like, he's, like, a foot taller, and he's got a different neck and shoulders, and, like, his haircut's different. And I'm like, yeah, you put on the Data-colored face paint, but...
But I remember as a kid, like, that freaked me out.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was like, Data, no!
Yeah. And he's got the cool contacts in, too.
Yeah. Which apparently were quite uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah.
So the animal things, or the pig people, attack, and instead of firing just, you know, ball and powder from their muskets, they're firing these energy blasts, which explode, and so that's not great, because they've got comparable firepower. But fortunately, Riker is there, and very quickly destroys two with his phaser, right? Mm-hmm. But more of them keep coming, and so, like, uh-oh, we're in danger. And then Q, as Data, says to Riker, like, save them, send the people to the ship. And he reveals to Riker that he has given him the power of the Q. So Riker has essentially become a Q now. Riker transports the Q back, or sorry, transports the crew back to the ship, and we get a commercial break. Mm-hmm. Yes. Did you have thoughts?
No, I'm just saying whatever cult Q's leading, I would join.
I mean, yeah, if you get the powers of Q, like
you
that seems
pretty sweet.
You got
the powers of Q? Heck yes.
Yeah, that seems really sweet.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess we'll get into this later on, but yeah.
And given the ethics that Starfleet has displayed thus far in this series, I'd be like, eh, it's total anarchy anyways. Like, chaotic good is where I'd put Q thus far. So I'd rather be there than at whatever lawful neutral or whatever Starfleet thinks it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Chaotic good.
Yeah.
Huh. So Riker has, as we mentioned, transported the crew away using the power of the Q. And we flash back to the ship where Picard and Yar are just kind of chilling out in the bridge waiting for people. And suddenly they find all the systems are running okay, that they're able to contact people, and that there's no more energy net. Like, everything's just returning back to normal. Picard gets in touch with some other member in engineering or something, I think it was. And he's like, yeah, everything's good, sir. Like, no issues here. It's like nothing has even really happened, right?
Right. And this is where it furthers my theory of chaotic good, because Space Hamlet didn't delay them getting to the planet to rescue the miners that they screwed up in the first place without the methane detectors.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of gets to an interesting point where, like, if you're Q and you can control space and time and all that, then, like, all the things we have for good or evil kind of vanish. You can just bring back anyone to life.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like a definitely a morally complex question.
Yeah.
And more existential and more.
Oh, yeah.
Equipped to get into for this episode a couple of chadas deep. So.
So the bridge crew arrives back and they inform Picard that they were under attack by these animal things. And Picard, like, wants more information, but Data's like, I can't really describe it, sir. It's, you know, aesthetically unpleasing. And, but unfortunately, Riker isn't back yet. He's taking his time with Q.
Bet you want someone on one time, Dave.
But Picard isn't worried. He thinks because Q is really interested in Riker, Riker's at least physically safe, right?
Or is he?
But the main thing is we got to rescue these miners or set off to the planet to rescue the miners.
I want to be clear. There's also minor miners in this.
That's true. There are minor miners. Yes. Oh my God. Yes. We'll get there. Yes. Back on that like nebulous planet with the soundstage with the green lighting, we have just Riker by himself, just kind of sitting against a rock, just laughing. Mm-hmm. Right. So Q flashes in front of him and appears now just as a Starfleet officer, no field marshal, no admiral, no like sash or anything, and starts talking to Riker about his new powers.
Well, he has the same shirt as Riker, right? Like the same level of buttons?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like he's a commander or whatever, a captain or whatever, but he's not like super duper.
He's trying to twinsies with Riker. He's trying every method out of this playbook. He's like, dang, negging didn't work. Yeah. Okay.
Just the shotgun approach of try everything and see what sticks. And Q reveals that after their encounter at Farpoint Station, he and the whole Q continuum discussed humans and were really intrigued and concerned, I guess, by a human being's desire to continually evolve. And they're worried that they're, as they continue to evolve, they'll only go stronger and more capable through the centuries and through the eons.
And I'm like, haha, joke's on him. I don't think we'll make it past the next 100 years.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm a realist.
Roddenberry didn't really foresee that.
Yeah. Thanks, fast fashion.
I mean, this
also
is
also global warming.
This is one of the reasons I love the show, is it's such a positive view of humanity.
Yeah.
And Riker says, so essentially Q offers Riker the chance to join the Q.
Mm-hmm. Join the Q.
But Riker doesn't want to join the Q.
Right? Okay. His response, though, is become a part of you. I don't even like you. And I was like, Riker, the indifference is the enemy of love, not dislike or hate. Oh. So gosh, now you have hurt Q's feelings and also given him hope at the same time. Yeah. He should have been like, meh.
Yeah.
And then like Q also, like Riker's just like, and they're having this little cute back and forth. Yeah. And then Q says, you're going to miss me. And I was like, yeah, damn straight, Q.
He was speaking right to you when he said that.
Yes, to me and Riker. I was like, I miss him already, Riker. Why aren't you feeling this?
So Riker, he says he doesn't want to join the Q. So Q leaves. And then while they're still on the same planet, that like soundstage planet, the bridge crew all returns. I think this time with Picard, along with the vicious animal things, the pig people, right? And their Napoleonic outfits and their rifles.
The crew returns with Dr. Crusher and Wesley,
who I'd blissfully
forgotten about until this moment.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we made it like, 22 minutes into an episode or something with no Wesley? And I was like, hell yeah, Q. Keep coming back.
But I think the Wesley appearance in this episode is quite interesting.
Oh, no, it's hilarious. Yeah. And I was like, so just to get this straight, you know, Q kept at bay Wesley and his walking nightmare of a lawsuit mother. and now they're here. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So the bridge crew returns along with Picard, Wesley, and Crusher, and they're about to be attacked by the vicious animal things. As the things advance, they got their drums and the trumpets. They got the whole thing. But the bridge crew, our friends, realize they've got no phasers, so they're defenseless.
I thought they were supposed to be skilled in like super martial arts or something.
So that comes, I mean, we saw that. Oh, we didn't talk about that episode.
That was the crazy racist episode. Yeah,
where Yara demonstrates her like ninjutsu skills.
And she like brags about it. She's like, Starfleet Academy has the best ninja skills or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, that didn't age well. But whatever it is, like, oh, we do all forms, Krav Maga or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, this is like a slap fight.
But so Worf like charges these guys, right? And he takes out, I think, two of them, and then he gets stabbed in the belly.
So, I mean, I appreciate self-confidence and I'm all for like building yourself up.
Yeah.
But does Worf actually think he's a good fighter? Because he's been taken down by like two Ferengi. And then we're talking about these like freaking pigmen with bayonets.
Yeah.
And he's like outmaneuvered by them. And they're in very uncomfortable costumes with very little moving ability.
Yeah, he does get bayoneted.
Like immediately.
Yeah.
Like just skewered.
So it's interesting. Like, well, I guess I don't want to give away spoilers, but the series does make, or the whole IP, I guess, does make Worf to be a really good fighter. But presumably that happens later because this first season, he's not doing super well.
I mean, like, it's Kirk level.
It is Kirk level.
What are you doing?
It is Kirk level.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
So he gets killed, and then Wesley runs out, doesn't check a six or anything, and he's like,
no!
I'm going to tend to Worf who's been bayoneted.
Like, not my mother, the doctor.
I mean, okay, actually, I totally understand that reasoning. If Wesley is this wunderkind, then he would know his mother's limitations. Yeah.
And so Wes charges over to Worf to like see to his belly wound, and he gets stabbed right through the back, bayoneted right through the back.
Yep.
And he's like, and you hear people say, Wesley, no.
And there's plenty of time for someone else to like run in and save him. I think it's telling that no one does.
Or as you say, don't run over there and then turn your back to the pig people.
Like, don't run into a situation where there's an ongoing fight and not have situational awareness.
Yeah, Wesley's not good. But he does have, as we learned from the Traveler, a preternatural understanding of space and time.
Which is useless if he gets stabbed in the back with a bayonet by a pig person.
And then Riker yells, I love this, no, damn it to hell! Then Riker throws up the chainmail energy net to block the pig people, and then kind of flashes his hands in the Q method and brings them all back aboard the Enterprise bridge, including Worf and Wesley.
And they're healed.
And they're healed. They're all fine.
Yeah, and Wesley's beautiful rainbow sweater, which again, I was like, are you guys, come on now, late 80s writers, are you guys, I feel like they're hitting at it. I loved it. I was like, yes, allyship, love it. His sweater, thank God, is not stained because I really love that sweater.
Yeah, it doesn't just heal him. He cures the sweater too. So
Q's got class and Q powers, apparently. They got class too. They're like, hey, that is a fine garment. they appreciate the fine craftsmanship. Yeah,
fine garment. So also when we get back to the bridge, Riker is looking very smudge and arrogant, right?
So smudge.
I think 2836, we see him arms crossed, like, yes, I did a good thing. And Picard deduces quickly that Riker has now the power of the Q.
And you can see it flash across Picard's face. He's just so jealous of Q and Riker's blossoming friendship or relationship.
Yeah. So when we return from commercial, Riker and Picard are in Picard's ready room and they're talking about these new powers. And so I had a hard time following this conversation, right? And we'll talk it through, but Picard basically says to Riker, like, if you want, like, Q's giving you the choice to take these powers or not. If you do refuse them, then you have to promise to never use them because you've got them already, right? Mm-hmm. So you basically have to swear off using these powers if you not want to take this. And Riker swears he will not use them. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why.
Why, like, he wouldn't use them?
Yeah.
Or why Picard would make him swear that?
Why he wouldn't use them?
I think it's because it's, like, Picard may be thinking that this is a test in itself. Like, it's like, can the second officer or second in command be tempted by these extreme powers to violate the standards that he claims to abide by?
Yeah.
Like, it's a bit of a moral question. Can I show, like, can he prove to Picard that it's possible to break his second in command?
So,
like, humans are fallible.
So is the Picard's concern then that, like, Riker will go down this slippery slope of abusing the powers and that will reveal humanity's weakness? Is that kind of the idea?
I think it's that, and then also that Riker might violate the prime directive and the things that...
That's true, because they never do that.
They never do that. At least not when Q's around.
Yeah.
Q's like the world principle, or it's the galaxy principle.
Yeah.
So I think he's worried that, I don't know, I kind of saw it as like a bit of a biblical sense, like an Adam and Eve temptation of the apple type of thing, where it's like,
interesting,
Riker's taking the apple, don't bite it.
Yeah.
I don't know. For some reason, that's kind of what fomented
I guess
mind.
I'm not sure I see the downside in biting it. Although if it is, you do start becoming corrupt and abusing the powers, which, as we'll see, is what he does in a way. Yeah, I guess I could see that being bad. Yeah, so you're just refusing temptation.
Right. So I was like, okay, this isn't actually a test for Riker. It's a test of Riker.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. A test of his character is like, and he's the representation of humanity in this case. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Riker swears off using these powers, and then they arrive at the planet where they had the mining accident. Crusher beams down with her fleet of little... residents to help out people.
Don't call them little, Dave. They're already underpaid.
Sorry.
Exhausted, okay?
They're overworked.
Exhaustipated.
They're real hero residents. And while they're like running around the rubble, Geordi finds a little girl kind of buried under some rubble. Data just starts grabbing the rubble and clearing it out with his superhuman strength, or just that they're giant
android strength
plastic. Yep.
Oh, also, yeah, plaster. Yeah.
And then they find this young girl who's now dead under the rubble.
This is probably the wrong thing to notice, but so she gets taken out of the rubble, and I had the same jelly shoes in the 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, nice. 3140. She's wearing jelly shoes. Like, they were crazy popular in the late 80s, early to mid 90s.
Yeah.
And they were cute, but they hurt like a mofo, and you ended up with blisters, like bleeding blisters. So you had these like clearish, cool, plasticky sandals.
Yeah.
But then, like, within day three, you'd have like a burst blister. So underneath it would be like blood congealing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty gross.
Well.
But yeah, so you she had the same jelly sandals.
Same jelly sandals as a minor minor.
As a minor minor.
And Data says to Riker, like, if you're Q, he doesn't finish the sentence, like, but presumably if you've got the powers of Q, you can bring this girl back to life. And Riker says he refuses to save her because of a promise that he made, which is to Picard.
Right. And also, hear me out. But again, don't mess with time. She could be future space Hitler.
She could.
We don't know.
Oh, yeah. So she could be future Princess Diana.
Bigger chance of her becoming a dictator. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And again, if it wasn't her, then time will correct itself, or humanity will correct its course, and someone else will be elevated or lowered to that position.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Never save anyone, ever.
Well, if they're wearing jelly sandals, they're a lost cause.
That's right.
You can't walk anyway.
They're already going downhill. Maybe it's just the trauma of having blisters from a young age.
Yeah. She's like, I'm dying, not from the methane, but because I have gangrene on my feet from these goddamn jelly sandals. One, don't bring me back.
The blister metastasized. Killed her.
We're not monsters. Okay.
So we go back aboard the bridge, where Riker is pissed off, really, at Picard, because he could have saved that girl, not from the blisters, but just from her life in general.
And then I'm like, okay, so is Crusher and Data, like, have they never seen a zombie movie? Because that's the other thing. What if you bring her back and it's like she's been brain dead for 10 minutes or whatever, and she's just like...
But I guess if you got the Q power, like, that's not an issue. Like, she would just go right back to normal.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So Riker requests a meeting with everyone on the bridge to discuss these new powers. And Picard says, sure, once we've resolved this mining situation, we'll have this meeting. But before we can really finish his sentence, Riker just storms off into the turbo lift, which is like, ooh, damn. So now we have our final scene where everyone's on the bridge. And Riker says, you know, I've called this meeting or whatever to discuss these new powers. And Picard says, correction, I've allowed you to have this meeting. And then Riker says, oh, okay, Jean-Luc, whatever, you know, very, very informal. And at 33:43, Picard responds to this with some fantastic side eye. Oh, there it is.
Ooh, yeah, it's, you guys, if you're not watching it now, just picture being burned.
Oh, yeah.
Burned by the side eye.
It's brief but potent. Oh. Crusher and Wes arrive onto the bridge, and Riker immediately tries to kick Wes off and says, none of this meeting isn't for you. And Wes protests, like, no, you made me a bridge officer, dude. Like, I should be here.
Rosephine, right? I'm here to support.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so then Riker starts to kind of bring everything to order by saying, like, look, I'm the same person I always was. You know, everything's fine just because I got these powers. Why
don't
do
be gel.
Yeah.
Don't hate me because I'm beautiful, to quote Carrie Hilson.
This does not appease people. And he asks, like, why is everyone still uncomfortable? And he proceeds to try to convince the crew that the Q continuum really admire humans and have given him this fantastic gift. And at this point, Q appears.
Oh, yes. Yes. And at this point, I'm like, okay, the writers have to be messing with those of us in the population who are like, yeah, like super pro gay rights, especially in like the late 80s, early 90s. I wasn't alive then.
Yeah.
But just from what I know from like reading about the history and being a lifetime like supporter and ally, like, and just, you guys, he's dressed as a monk.
Yeah, so Q appears dressed
like
as a monk.
Dudes living with dudes.
And he kind of comes onto the bridge. And actually, it kind of reminded me a little bit of that, you know, in Tropic Thunder.
I have the same note. Yeah, the movie trailers.
The movie trailers in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, and it's like Robert Downey Jr. and Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
And it's like, their love was forbidden. And it's like this like Oscar bait type like fake movie trailer, and it's like two monks, and it's the same exact outfit. Yeah, I swear to God.
Like Brokeback Mountain in a monastery kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Which, I mean, let's be honest, not completely deviating from the way it was in history. If you were homosexual at that.
Yeah, there's a lot of material for that.
Yeah. So I was like, the writers are just messing with us at this point. Come on.
Or they just have the costume there because Q just picks whatever costume he wants.
Also possible. And the moment he enters at first, I was just like, whoa, Disney's going to call and be so pissed because that's an Obi-Wan costume.
Yeah, you thought he was a Jedi.
I thought he was a Jedi. Yeah. And I was like, bitch, no, that's trademarked. You're going to get sued. So, yeah, that changed. And then, I was like, the monk costume is amazing. Wow, really going full hog on this forbidden love angle. And I put full hog in quotes because of the pig people earlier.
And so Q starts talking to the rest of the crew, and just some great exchanges between him and Picard. I have like 3603 and 3604. Q gives this amazing like smile, like this kind of shit-eating grin, followed immediately by like a strong reaction from Picard, who does not like Q. And he also asks him directly, what is the need of your costumes, Q? Like, why do you always dress up like
that? I'm like, shut up, Picard. Some of us like it.
Q says to Riker, like, you love each of these people. Demonstrate your love as a gift and kind of show off your new powers at the same time.
And I would like to mention that yet again, Q has flawless makeup.
Yes.
This is like, when we were mentioning Tasha before, was like bleached out. This is where all the makeup went. Just glorious cheeks. Eyeshadow. They've got it going on. I was just like, all right. Yes. Again, I'd totally be a Q acolyte.
Riker asks Picard permission to give gifts. And Picard says, yeah, absolutely. Go nuts.
Demonstrate your gifts of affection. And Picard's like secretly hoping maybe Riker will finally make my fish walk. Or I'll get my hair back. I haven't seen that since I was 18.
So the Riker turns to the crew and says, all right, shall I guess your dreams? And he goes around and he starts out with, he goes to try to start with Wes. Or actually, no, Crusher pulls Wes off the bridge. She's like, come on, Wesley, get out of here. This is no place for you. And Riker's like, no. I may know Wesley best of all from our long talks and all this kind of stuff.
And for once I say, good instincts, Mom.
Riker then turns Wesley into a full-grown adult man.
Yeah, Dave. Questions about this?
Yes.
Now, I don't want to like turn this into an issue, but what the hell is up with the writers and the Aryans? Like, Wesley is a brunette with brown eyes.
He is a brunette, brown
but eyes. Apparently, adult Wesley is like a blonde.
Yeah.
With baby blue eyes,
who's considerably taller.
Who's considerably taller and like kind of like poster child Aryan Nation.
Oh yeah,
kind of vibe. And I was like, the hell?
He's a very attractive man,
but he does have the same shirt.
And Geordi comments like, damn, Wes.
I know.
Not bad.
Lavar's like, hey, no. This Q's onto something.
You got to wonder, like, does Will Wheaton, like, it'd be great to see Will Wheaton side by side with this guy.
Oh, I looked it up and I was like, the hell?
No, they do. This is not a future prediction.
They do not look anything like each other. And I'm like, okay, that's a little offensive, Riker. And also, I would be freaking pissed if I was Wesley. I'd be like, I'm sorry, I'm a super genius and you just took 10 years off my life.
Yeah.
I'm going to freaking punch 10 years out of your life. Like, that is not cool. And instead he's like, cool, great, I'm grown up. And it's like, you're missing like peak athletic years, bro.
Yeah.
Don't get it.
And so then the next victim is Data, who Riker is, he doesn't even get around to it, but he's kind of going to offer Data the option to be human, and Data refuses it because to him it wouldn't be real.
Nice. Right?
It would not be authentic humanity. Riker turns to Geordi and offers Geordi like real vision. And actually he goes over and like kind of moves his hands and gives Geordi his sight back. Mm-hmm. And so Geordi takes off his goggles or his visor and looks around. And this, when I was a kid, I remember this very distinctly. This scared the hell out of me because I had never seen LeVar Burton's eyes. His real eyes.
Oh!
Like the actor's eyes.
Oh, wow.
I had seen the white contacts. Yeah. But there was like, it freaked me out to see LeVar's full face. Nice. For whatever reason, I always, in my mind, he's got the white eyes.
That makes sense. No, I could see that.
LeVar or Geordi doesn't want this. He says like the price is too high and he wouldn't like who he's got to thank.
Oh, yeah. But not before hitting on Yar.
He does hit on Yar and says,
like, hey,
you're more beautiful than I guessed.
You're more beautiful than I'd imagined. And it's like, literally the first thing this guy does is hit on like the lady on the deck. And I'm like, LeVar has got game. Good for you, LeVar. LeVar goes back to being blind, right?
Yeah,
he's like, he chooses the Jedi path.
He chooses not to have the natural eyes. Yeah.
He's like, no, go back to the way things were.
Because he doesn't want to thank Q.
Oh, you're the real treasure. And the books, both of you together.
So our next victim of Riker's attention is Worf. And Riker decides to give Worf a fictional Klingon woman, like to just make up this Klingon woman out of nowhere, who then goes to attack Tasha as some sort of rival. Worf defends Tasha and knocks the Klingon woman across the bridge.
Right. And I was like, not cool. And yeah. Then, and you were actually, you arrived at this part.
I was in the room. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, what the hell? Not cool. Yeah. Domestic violence, not cool. Yeah. And then it said, like, in the captions, seductive growl. And yes. I was like, oh, I've misinterpreted this situation.
This is Klingon foreplay.
Yes. But I did love that somewhere someone in the captioning group was just like, no, this isn't a growl. It's a seductive growl. Because frankly, it sounded the same as a regular growl. Yeah. So. And I was like, wait, did Worf use the same growl earlier at Q?
He's got a variety of growls.
And I was like, no, because I mean, like, maybe it was a seductive growl at Q. And Q was like, not interested. I'm here for Riker.
That would have been great if they closed captioned seductive growl in that first growl.
Someone's got the fanfic to make that happen.
So Worf refuses the Klingon woman. And then at this point, Wes also chimes in and he says, like, you know, thank you, but make me back to the way I was. I want to do this my way, like, naturally. But what really freaked me out is it's still Will Wheaton's voice.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
In this dude's body.
I was just like, freaking Aryan Nation, Wesley.
So, like, what a cruel joke, though, is I'm going to make you this, like, you know, tall Aryan looking dude, but you're going to have the voice of a teenage Will Wheaton.
I thought it was cruel because it's just like you seriously cut off 10 years of his prime, like, prime life. You know,
there's that
arguably.
Too. Yeah.
Like late teens or mid to late teens, early 20s. That's like the age of most Olympians, right?
Yeah.
So I was just like, wow, I'd be so pissed if someone stole that from me.
But Wes, as we learned in the first episode, when he fell off a slippery rock, he's not going to any Olympics anytime soon.
Oh, like I said before, you can't have it all, right?
So yeah, Wes goes back to being Wes. And at this point, everyone has refused Riker's gifts, right? And so Riker now feels like an idiot. And he says as much to Picard, like, I feel like an idiot. And Picard says, quite right. So you should. And so really, like, Q has been defeated. No one's taken these gifts. And Picard calls upon Q to honor their wager. And Q starts welshing and says, like, I don't remember any wager. But suddenly Q starts to be recalled by the other Q. Like, they want to talk to him about the stuff that he's been doing. He gets called away by the other Q to answer for his behavior, essentially. Mm-hmm. And hopefully he will honor his promise to leave humanity alone.
Hopefully not. What are you talking about? He and Riker, it's written in the stars, Dave. Now, every time like Riker and Troy start flirting, I'm going to be like, no.
Save yourself for Q. But that is essentially the end of the episode. Everything goes back to normal. They rescued the miners and they just wind up back exactly where they started without really any interruptions.
I actually disagree. I think that Riker was significantly more rude and disrespectful to Picard than pretty much like any antagonist thus far.
Yeah.
And Picard's like, it's all fine. And I'm like, Picard, you were like ready to blow up the Ferengi. What the hell's wrong with you? Like, this is not cool.
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't like Riker be space grounded for a bit or like have some sort of penalty? Like, what is this?
I would be super embarrassed if I had acted that way. Like, I feel like I absolutely would. If you're given absolute power, it's hard not to become a little bit kind of egotistical or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I would feel very embarrassed if I had acted the way Riker did.
Like, I mean, I would just because it's a stupid gift to shave 10 years off of someone's lifespan and turn them blonde. Like, what the hell's that about, Riker?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. But yeah, Riker doesn't seem really fazed by this, you know?
Yeah, which is again, problematic to me. Because it's like, I feel like there should be some penalty. You offended the order. You're disrespectful to the captain.
Yeah, there should be.
You tried to encourage mutiny, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Picard's hoping that just the shame of his actions will be penalty enough.
Or he's just relieved because he's like, oh, thank God, my second in command doesn't have God powers anymore. Because that was really tough to compete with. I mean, I got Shakespeare in my background, but like,
I had a couple
powers?
More, a couple more lines from The Merchant of Venice. But if that didn't work, that was it.
He's like, yeah. I'm rusty in my two gents of Verona.
So Amara, it sounds like you really enjoyed this episode.
Favorite episode thus far.
Yeah.
I was in stitches and again, I cannot emphasize this enough. Like, I'm really lucky to have come from a household where like my parents gave me the soundtrack to Rent when it first came out.
Yeah.
And so I was in rural Idaho, and actually part of the reason why I said Princess Diana when you're like, oh, who's a good person is because of her education about the AIDS epidemic. And she was very progressive in the way she treated people who had different sexual orientations. And my parents, I know my mom definitely was influenced by that. And so she, like, we never heard the F word in our house when referring to gay people. And again, I was given Rent when it first came out, which was like the early 90s. Like, it's one of the first soundtracks I memorized.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that, you've got people from a bunch of different walks of life. And it just taught me to not be prejudiced. Yeah. You know, like, the whole, I mean, it's cliche to say, but love is love. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, seeing this episode made me really happy because, you know, I try to be as educated as I can on a subject that, you know, it's like trying to be educated on a subject that you're not going to deal with firsthand. So yeah. You want to just keep learning and learning and learning. And I really was like, wait, this feels like it was some sort of love song in a way to people who, no, seriously though, that, yeah. You know, might have been going through homosexuality or yeah. bisexuality, not being seen at a time where people were grossly homophobic. And I love that. It makes me really happy when people are able, and that's a big thing in the theater community. Like, it's always been a haven, you know, so that made me really happy because it's like, it's a safe place. Like, I knew in my hometown, I knew of two closeted folks, and they stayed in the closet till they were out of Idaho and in college because unfortunately they didn't feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, so I love it when media is able to kind of like shout out, and like, hopefully the teenagers were able to pick up on that. And if that was the intent behind the writers and Roddenberry's intent, I think that's really fucking cool.
So I don't think it was the intent.
Oh, okay.
Which is why I'm really enjoying doing this with you, because you see these things that are completely different from how I saw it when I was a kid. Right. So I think I guess we don't know what the mind of the writers is, but just from the fact that like it was rewritten a number of times, like maybe there was that initial message in there, but yeah.
I mean, they're like forward thinking enough to be okay with men dressing in skirts and dresses, yeah. which would have been like pretty progressive for the late 80s at that time.
Well, you know what? We should open up to the audience and see like what people out there think, if they think this is like a hidden too fast, too curious kind of thing.
That one, I think, is just me being like, I don't have any experience with this franchise and like being like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I just, two guys wrestling shirtless in the dirt for like 10 minutes. Like, if you swap the genders out, people would be like, that's the beginning of a porno.
Yeah.
Like,
so for our audience, if you know, tell us if you've seen this before. Mm-hmm. What do you think of Amara's interpretation? If you've not seen it, can you see what she's talking about? I'd be very curious to hear that in comment sections and stuff.
Yeah, me too. Too. Because I do think, and I made the note here at the end, that I thought that it was like really wholesome in that sense. If it's something that they managed to pull off, kind of like in a really like in a public way, but with discretion, it's really fucking cool because it's nice, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I loved it. That made me happy.
I'm glad. I'm really glad.
Yeah.
Well, our next episode, I think, is called Haven. And I do not remember anything about it from the title. I think this one might actually have Troy's mother, Luxana Troy.
Luxana?
Luxana Troy.
That's a great name.
Which means nothing to you at this point.
Luxana.
But I'll just say Luxana, two things. One is she loves the drama.
Loves the drums. Here for it. Okay.
And the second thing is she is played by, I believe it's Gene Roddenberry's wife.
Oh.
Who is also the voice of the computer.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Loves the drums. Is Troy's father cute? Is that why she was absent from this episode? Because he's like, babe, I don't want you to get absent. Not babe. Like, honey, I don't want you to get bayoneted by one of my man pigs. Okay. Maybe take some leave for this week.
Sorry, I can't tell you spoilers.
Oh, damn it. Okay.
All right. Well, that's it for us for this week. So we hope you really enjoyed this episode, at least 1/10 as much as Amara did.
All joking aside, I love the idea that this was written as like a secret kind of love letter to any people who or homosexual or bisexual watching Star Trek out there. I think that would be such a cool idea, and I hope that was the case.
Mm.
So I wanted to put the joking aside because it's a serious issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you for listening.
And we will see or hear from y'all or talk to y'all in another week or so with our next episode of Haven. So thanks everyone for listening. We hope you really enjoyed it. As I said, 1/10 as much as Amara did.
Yeah, which is unlikely.
And we'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Oh, well, the good news, though, also, is that Picard found his way out. Like, he's like, doors!
Oh, yeah, Picard does remember how to use the doors.
He just, like, He figured his way out, or one just opened for him.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but he got into a different room and I was really excited for him.
Yeah.